Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time. My name is Tim Murdoch.
And my name is Matt Emmert. And we're here today with one of the stars of many horror classics, including the original Stepfather, Popcorn, When a Stranger Calls Back, just to name a few. One of our favorite scream queens of all time, Jill Sholin.
Woo!
Hi, Jill.
Hi, that was so nice.
How are you today? How are you doing?
I'm great. It's a beautiful day.
So I take it you're in LA then, just like us.
I am in LA. I'm in Toluca Lake.
I used to live there. I love it there.
Yeah, it is an unseasonably warm day today. And as usual in California, it's nice and never cold. Speaking of that, where are you from originally? Where did you grow up? And did you always were you always interested in becoming an actress?
Well, Tim will know this, the first part of your question. I was born down the street, St. Joseph's Hospital, which is now Providence. Which it's directly across the street from the Disney Studios, that hospital. And so I kind of grew up, I'm a Valley girl.
I love it. Your original Valley girl.
I am. I was, born in Burbank and later moved to Encino. And I've been, except for when I started making movies and working in the business, that's really when I started my traveling all over the world and going to other places. But I live in two places now. I live in LA, but I also live down in Rancho Santa Fe, which is like in the North County part of San Diego.
So you've been kind of a California girl most of your life, at least home base wise.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Me too. I'm a California girl too. I grew up in Southern California. obviously you've had an extensive career in lots of different movies and all different genres. We, of course, being a horror podcast, would love to talk to you about some of the horror movies that you've been in. But taking it back, even before you got into horror, I saw on your resume that your first feature film was a Joel Schumacher movie called DC Cab.
Yes.
And I also saw that it starred, in addition to many people, Mr. T, Gary Busey, and Bill Maher. Can you tell us about this movie?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I've been getting a lot of like people writing about DC Cab lately because I guess it just came out on DVD. Mm. They did a Blu-ray of it. They did its first Blu-ray. It was a crazy experience. I was very green in the business. I just didn't understand it at all. I didn't have, sorry about that. No. I didn't have the type of, my parents weren't involved in the business and they were very supportive of me emotionally to get in the business because I could sing and dance and act and do all that, but they didn't foster any kind of career in me. And I just did all of it on my own. And when I got my first movie, DC Cab, I didn't even know it was a movie. I mean, that's embarrassing to say, but I didn't know it was Universal, a big film. And it was at the time. It was a big film at the time. And it was a crazy cast.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of energy on the cast with all those comedians. And that was my first exposure to movie making, which I must say, I didn't realize. I mean, how would you know it's your first movie? It was a totally different and unique experience, not like any other movie I ever made.
I mean, Jill,
lots of personalities on that.
I can't even. That's why the truth is, Jill, like when we were going through your resume, I was like, you know what? We want to focus on the horror movies. But when I saw that was your first film and I'm like, Mr. T, Gary Busey, Bill Maher, like this is the craziest and coolest cast all at the same time.
I know. So, and I became real good friends with Gary Busey. I've kind of lost contact with him. He found out I was at one of the horror conventions some years ago and he was talking to someone, and when he heard my name, he's like, put her on, and we had a funny short conversation. I really don't know anything about him, but we remained friends for quite some time after the making of that. And then I also remained friends for some time with Bill. And then I worked with him again on a TV show called Sarah that starred Gina Davis.
Yeah. Wow. That had like the most amazing cast ever.
Wow.
It was the most, I think it was one of the best casts ever put together for television. That's so funny, Tim. That's so great that you said that, because of course it never comes up. And it's like one of those kind of jobs that I forgot that I did because it was so small and it didn't become anything, the show. It just, I think maybe they did 13 episodes.
I mean, I think it was ahead of its time. I think audiences in 85, I don't know if they would have, but today I think people would respond very well.
Yeah, it was so much fun. We had so much fun. And, you know, I played Gina Davis's niece, and my storyline was involved with Bill. So that was fun, you know, remaining friends and then, you know, working with him. And of course, nobody thinks of him as an actor.
Yeah.
I think,
you know, during that time, you know, he was performing all around LA, you know, in the clubs. I mean, I can't remember which ones, but I remember he'd say, oh, like, come down, I'm going to be blah, blah, blah tonight. And I would go see quite a few of his shows that he did. And he was just like your guy, you know, very, very funny. Always had you under the table, dry, very dry sense of humor. And, but then, you know, he exploded with his
the show. Yeah. I love Yeah, no, it's great. So, you know, moving on to when you first ventured into horror, in the 1985 TV movie Chiller, which, you know, was directed by the late great Wes Craven, and wanted to ask you about, because, you know, he's one of obviously the most well-renowned horror directors ever. What was it like working with him on Chiller as a director?
Well, you know, I feel like he got the bad end of the bargain having me, because I was still very, very new, young actress. And he was very accomplished. I mean, I remember him knowing exactly what he wanted. Like, he had a vision. Not all directors do. I've worked with a lot of directors, and a lot of them don't know what they're doing. And there's like a little link. The movies that are good happen to be the ones where the directors knew what they were doing.
Sounds right.
They go hand in hand.
Light bulb. It's like, he knew what he wanted. I had no footing in the genre. I did my best. Let's say that. My best. Oh. But it wasn't the best.
Oh, I mean, I thought you were great. Like, it's such a, I love the whole cryogenically, frozen guy comes back. Yeah. And I thought you did great. Like, I would have never known what you're saying. I think that it was a chilling part, and you were kind of like the good to, you know, I think his name's Miles, is the bad son. And I think you were the adopted daughter. And yeah, I thought you were great. I didn't know that at all. And I think it's actually a fun kind of TV movie. I just was interested when I saw it was Wes Craven, because I think that was right after Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, or right before.
No. Oh, yeah.
It might have been right before. It was right around there. But again, another wonderful cast. Paul Sorvino was in it. Beatrice Straight, who won the Academy Award for Network.
Yes.
So it also, that had a lovely cast. And that was, you know, for me, I was so excited to work with her.
Yeah, no. And
I was very green, very young to the business, very green.
Exactly. Well, and then moving on to, you know, after a number of, I know you did a number of TV movies and other feature films, then came, you know, the big horror classic, The Stepfather, which obviously is very widely known. And we wanted to ask you, how did you first hear about the audition for Stepfather? What was the audition process like for that role?
Well, it was just through my agent that I had. I had the best agent in the world. You know, she was a boutique agency. And really handpicked her clients, you know. She just, you know, got me the audition, and I went to it and had a couple of callbacks. But it's funny, when you read a part, some parts that you read, you're just like, I can do, you just immediately resonate with the character or the way they talk. And I do remember very strongly the experience of like, I can get this movie. This is my part. Mm-hmm. And that's not always, is most of the time, that's not the case. But that one, like, I'm going to sound like a lunatic, you know, but it, like, literally, I felt like it was in the ethers, you know, it was like telling me, this is your part. You know,
that's confidence is a good thing to have in this business.
And also being able to really connect with the role, like you say, you know, that's huge.
I did. It was really weird because Stephanie, she was, you know, I'm very, very different from her. We're not alike at all. But it's like when you're talking with someone and, you know, no matter how different they are than you, there's something about them that you just connect with. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and I connected with her. I had like this deep empathy for her. I just kind of got her in my soul, in my belly. I just connected to her. She was not a difficult part to play because the connection was just there. I don't know why my alarm keeps going off. Last time.
No worries. So prior to getting the role of Stephanie, were you a fan of horror? Did you ever want, I mean, I know you had been in Chiller, but had you ever really like wanted to be in a horror movie, or were you a fan of the genre?
Absolutely not.
Hey, totally honest answer.
No, it is an honest answer. I mean, for me, that's the only way to be, but because I kind of find it fascinating. But most of my movies that I did in that genre were not over-the-top horror.
Yeah,
most
they weren't like hardcore horror films.
Yeah, they like, this was almost like a suspense thriller.
Oh, definitely,
know?
Yeah.
One of the things, like, you know, we do this podcast, we revisit the films before we interview people, and revisiting the Stepfather, it's such a solid film.
Yeah.
It's so fast paced and like, you're so good in it. It's such a great movie. And you know, I think it's 33 years old. It's still such a solid, good movie. And I guess I have to ask, like, when it's on TV, do you watch it?
No.
When was the last time you've seen it? Has it been a long time?
Well, I didn't see it forever, probably for nearly, how old is it? 33
yeah.
years. So I probably didn't see it for 25 years. And then I don't know why, just in the last couple of years, I've been asked to do a couple of film festivals and they've played it. That or popcorn. Popcorn is popular, mm-hmm. you know, or being screened. And so I did have the opportunity. They played it, I think, at the Egyptian Theater, yeah. I think. And they've also played it at Quentin Tarantino's theater. I don't know the name of the theater. I think it's
New Beverly.
Yeah,
they played it there, I think, a couple of times. And I didn't see it there, but I did do a Q&A at the Egyptian. So I did have the opportunity to see it. Forgot about the nudity scene.
But you know, you're not the only one. The stepfather gets naked.
Yeah, Terry O'Quinn is naked in the very beginning of it.
That's right. He does a little bump shot.
You can see some more than bump through the mirror, actually.
And we saw.
Yeah. Well, speaking of speaking of Terry O'Quinn, what was he like to work with? I mean, he plays such an incredibly disturbing and creepy character, but like, what was he like on set to work with? Was he very stay in the mindset, or was he different than, you know, that?
He's a consummate actor. He's just so consummate. He's professional is what he is. And it was like, you know, they flew him up and auditioned, and they had three men they were picking, three actors. And I remember Jay Benson and Joe Rubin, they were like, because I obviously had to read with all three of them. We were already on location. And I said, that one, Terry, he's the one. And they were already thinking that, but I think they wanted, because there was so much interaction between us, they asked my opinion. If I'd said something different, I don't think they would have listened to me, but.
I read that he was the last one cast. Is that right?
It's a little muddy, but for me, but they had stars lined up.
Wow.
And people backed out and they couldn't get the deals made. And both for the mother and the stepfather. And I remember once talking, I think to Joe, I was talking to him at the time, like all those years ago. And I was like, well, why did you cast me first? And he's like, because we thought the girl would be the hardest person to find. We would just, you know, book a star on it, the other two parts. And they have people. I know Meg Foster did the second one, but I'm almost positive she was offered the role of the mother.
Oh, wow.
Did they approach you to be in the sequel or the remake in 2009?
No, not for the remake. At one point, we did get a phone call about a part two, and I don't remember the conversation. You know, I guess because I never approached getting into the business from a, like, I want to be a doctor. It was more like, I sing, so I'm going to sing. Oh, I can act. I'm going to act. It was like fun.
Yeah.
I never really, in the years that I worked, I took the work very seriously, but I never approached deal making and all that stuff from a very strong business perspective. And I didn't have anybody to have oversight. I mean, I had my agent, mm-hmm. and she did her best, but I never pushed. I never pushed back. I never, you know, anything. So I really don't remember the conversation because it's not really where my head was at. I was like, oh, if they want me to do it, great. If they, you know, whatever. I don't think it was a good perspective for me to be coming from in retrospect.
Well, I just have to say, I mean, I personally would have loved to have you in the sequel come back, because the truth is, and I'm going to fanboy out a little bit on this, but I really see, like Tim was saying, especially the character of Stephanie as one of the true horror heroines of all time, like literally up there with all the most famous scream queens, because you made this part. I mean, she was not only just a smart and relatable character, but she was kind of like always one step ahead of Terry O'Quinn and just a very relatable, tough, but down to earth character. And that's really a testament to your performance. Yeah. So, I mean, it was just great.
Oh, you guys are making me cry. that's sweet. And I want to say that at that time, I also felt that way. I think one of the main reasons, and this is no criticism to any other actress, it has nothing to do with that. It's just me, who I am. One of the reasons I had no interest in horror, like the, you know, the nightmares and the Fridays and the, you know, go on. I'm only using those as examples, is because all those girls, like, the characters, not the actresses. The actresses are wonderful people, but the characters didn't always seem super bright. And then they died. They don't die. and they were played in a certain way. And this girl, I was like, yeah, she fights back. She survives. I really resonated with that at that time for women, for girls in that genre. And I wasn't thinking the whole, you know, gotta fight for women thing, like how we are much more conscious about these kinds of things now. It was just personal inside of me that I felt that way.
No, that's great. You know, speaking of the big fight, like with the climactic scene, I read somewhere, and tell me if it's true, that you were so disturbed after filming that climax battle with Terry O'Quinn that you had recurring nightmares about it. Is that true?
It wasn't quite that, but near. You know, I did, they have to have a stunt double for you. And I did all my stunts. They had a stunt double also do some of the scenes that I did, you know, and I think one where they really threw me, they had her do it because, you know, they don't need me being knocked out or anything. And I don't remember exactly. So she did some, but I did a lot as an actress. Mm-hmm. And I was so in it that when I went home in the evenings while we were shooting that sequence, I was having nightmares.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean,
afterwards, but during the film. But can I go back to one thing like 10 minutes ago?
Of course.
Yeah.
I have to say this when you asked me about horror movies, and I said, absolutely not. First of all, today, I've never been able to get through The Exorcist. I've talked about that film a million times and will always talk about it because for me, it's one of the most terrifying things ever. Because it seemed like based in reality of fear and spirits and all that. And evil spirits. But, and because this will, I know you're going to get to this later. So I'm going to just say it right now. We're going to toss it out there right now. There was one horror movie that I loved, When a Stranger Calls.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes. We are definitely going to be getting to When a Stranger Calls back. But When a Stranger's Called, especially that opening scene, is terrifying.
That was the only horror movie that hooked me. The only one. So it was very coincidental later. But we'll get to that in a minute. Oh,
yeah. No, but that's a, I mean, you picked a great one. A great one, you know, with that.
I mean, well, I mean, we could just jump right to it. After you saw that, you kind of lived it with the sequel.
Yeah, he did a take on it. And yes, I got to do it all. Like, it, basically, it's the same. I mean, it's not the same. It's
just as effective.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the opening scene is great. You know, just one thing that we had mentioned before about when they did a remake of Stepfather. First off, did you ever see the remake? And how did you feel when you heard they were going to do a remake of The Stepfather?
Old. I felt old.
Well, yeah, I appreciate your version 1,000 times. I don't even remember the 2009 one.
I remember it, and it was you know, Dylan Walsh played the Terry O'Quinn part, and he did a good job. But first off, there's not a daughter character; there's a son, and it became a little bit too teeny bopper ish. It just was more like
I felt yours had higher stakes.
Yeah, yours just felt more suspense thriller. This felt more like teenage drama with a crazy character than remake did.
Well, just going to the very essence of the difference between when a child, a young adult type child, is in that situation, it's just more vulnerable having a girl as the character than a boy.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I mean, it is, a boy is just kind of an on the nose kind of thing, you know, clash with the stepfather. And the girl, I mean, I remember too with Joe Rubin, like I was like, this seems gratuitous to me that she's stepping into the shower naked. I just don't think it's necessary. It's not that I was opposed to it, you know, the nudity part. I just thought it was unnecessary. And Joe said, I disagree with you. It makes her vulnerable to see her like naked for a second and the audience knowing that he's going lunatic down there and she doesn't know it yet is compelling. It just makes her all that much more vulnerable.
Especially and I think that happens next.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that was exactly, that's the point. And but I did see the second one. My nephew who runs similar to, what was the name of Quentin Tarantino's Beverly?
Beverly Cinema?
Yeah. There's one theater like that down in Encinitas or Solana Beach area. I think it's Encinitas on Highway 1. And he runs it. And he's such a huge, huge movie person. He knows everything about film. And he's like, Aunt Jill, we're going to get the family together and we're going to see the new stepfather.
That's awesome, though, you know?
was
so cute. I didn't like it.
So in 1987, when the movie premiered, was there a red carpet premiere or was there like a cast and crew screening, or what was your thought when you saw it on the big screen for the first time?
I liked it. I thought it was good. I don't know. There was no big red carpet, you know. but I think there probably was a screening, but I did see it in the movie theater, I think. You know, it was very interesting. I don't know if you read about this, but the movie came out and then they pulled it and then they re-put it out with a completely new campaign. I'm going to tell you what happened. And again, from a conversation on the phone with Joe Rubin that I had, when I was told that they're bringing it back out again, he said, our mothers and grandmothers could not have written us better reviews.
Oh, wow.
Such phenomenal reviews from high profile critics. A couple of high profile critics didn't see it the same way, but there were enough at the time that did that caught the attention. So they re-put it out. And when they put it out, they only put it out for like 2 weeks. And I remember I went to Westwood and saw it there. Every single performance was sold out. Every single one. And the thing that was so shocking was when every seat in the house is full, I couldn't believe how much they were laughing. I mean, it was almost like a comedy. It was like this dark side. It was like it had this really dark, and it does. Terry O'Quinn is frightening and hilarious at times in it.
Especially that scene when you're in the basement getting ice cream and he's going crazy. Insane.
And you know what I've noticed, and I'm sure Tim could do because we've been to a million horror movies, is that people laugh sometimes because they're nervous and scared. And it's like that uncomfortable laughter when you're like, you know, because you're uncomfortable. So I almost see, because people laughing at horror as them, actually, that's their only way to deal with being scared.
I kind of do that every day of my life.
Laughter's great,
I'm
though.
Always nervously laughing, like, ha, ha, ha.
That's amazing. Well, you know, I mean, we could talk about Stepfather forever, because we absolutely love it. But, you know, moving on through some of the other ones, after Stepfather came I guess it's kind of like a teen high school thriller, Cutting Class. Now, I've read that you didn't necessarily love this film. Can you tell us why, or just a little bit about that experience with Cutting Class?
Well, I had a few years where I got a lot of attention for either meeting on high profile things and or getting things, both. And I was very busy at the time, and this script came along, and it was like, it just, you know, when you read a good script, I mean, it's right there. It just comes out, you know.
Yeah.
It can be a small script, but still be good. Like the people, like that Stephanie and the stepfather, it was a beautifully written character. And Cutting Class did not have that. And my representation at the time talked me into it. They said, you know, the writer director, he had written, it's escaped me right now, but it was a big film. And they were like, you know, he's could become important, so you should do this film. And it's like, how could that become important? That's how I felt. But you know, it was meant to be, you know, my working on that film, Life is Funny, my best friend, you know, that's when I started dating Brad, was on that movie. And
he's hideous.
Wait, Brad Pitt? No, who's that
small indie actor?
But this is the funny part about that. You know, it's my best friend who lived growing up when I moved to Encino. I told you guys I lived in Encino. Uh-huh. She lived across the street in one house up from me. And she was like, I was going through a breakup with someone. And she was like, you need to not date actors. You need to only date, you know, really nice men and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, then she came to me like 2 weeks later, Jill, I'm working on this movie. She was a costume designer. And by the way, my dear friend is no longer with us. She lost her life to cancer at 39.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. She's lovely, was the loveliest person. And anyway, she was like, Jill, I'm working on this movie and there is this guy. You have to meet him. He's so wonderful. He's down to earth. I'm like, well, who is he? And she said, he's an actor. I said, Kelly, remember, no actors. I'm not dating actors. And she goes, I know. But this one is different. Oh. She said, he's so nice. He's not from here. He's from Missouri.
Oh, wow.
And the weird part was when my agents talked to me and I said, no, I don't want to meet him. No interest. And then the weird part was it was now like maybe a week later or something. And my agent was trying to talk me into saying yes to this film. And I remember I was in my car and I said yes. And then in no time, it was like phone call. And then they're like, okay, great, it's set. You need to go right now to a wardrobe fitting. And I'm sitting there waiting for the costume designer to walk in. And all of a sudden, this girl comes in and she goes, Jill? And I go, Kelly?
Oh, my.
And her first words out of her mouth were, this is that movie. You're the guy I want you to meet.
Oh, my God. You guys hadn't told each other the names of them. That's so crazy.
No, you just randomly know how friends are. You're like, oh, I'm doing this thing. And there's a da-da-da. And it's kind of like, I love in broadcast news when Albert Brooks and...
Holly Hunter,
yes. And they do, you know, they're such good friends. And one of them says to the other something along the lines of, they're on the phone and they're like, great. Okay. So I'll meet you there in a few, you know, at that place over by the place where we met near the thingamajig there. Okay. Okay. Great. There.
Yes. Wow.
So that was our language. You don't use words. You know people so well. You just do this kind of shorthand that nobody understands but the two of you.
So you got to work with your friend who was a costume designer. You met Brad Pitt it's definitely a different sort of movie. You know, it's funny, we revisited it and, you know, Brad Pitt plays the guy who's supposed to, I guess, be the good guy. But I feel like he treats your character so badly throughout that movie that I'm like, you're the only person I like in that movie because, you know, there's the killer, the other guy, and then there's Brad Pitt, who's kind of mean the whole time.
Well, I think it's to throw off the audience, right?
Yeah, but it's a different sort of movie. Yeah.
It is. And it's fine. I have difficulty because it's hard sometimes. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And I don't want to be offensive to anyone because for sure, if I directed my first movie, it would probably be terrible. you know, it's not easy to make a good film.
Yeah.
It's not easy. That's why there are so few of them. And so, you know, I'm hesitant to be critical, but it's not a great film.
I think what you're saying is very nice and very safe.
And it's just an honest opinion. You know, it's not like, you know, some movies and also like it's just any film. Some people like certain films. Some people gravitate towards others and that kind of thing. You know,
I have films, too, that I watch that I know are not good filmmaking, but I just like them anyway. There's something about them that just makes me laugh but it's not great filmmaking. But you like it. It's entertaining.
Oh no! Of course, well, of course.
I mean, we're not film snobs. We
as long as we just have a good time watching it. That's kind of. But at the same time, you definitely can recognize a really quality film. You know, especially in the horror genre.
I agree.
So I know, obviously, you know, moving past Cutting Class, like because I know, probably there's always a lot of buzz because that had Brad Pitt and everything, but didn't want to pry into that relationship at all because that's a personal thing. The only dating related question I had for you, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but there was a rumor that after breaking up with Brad Pitt that you dated the director of Halloween 4, Dwight Little. Is that true? It's just crazy how intermixed the horror community is. Oh, no.
No.
Oh, okay. I know. Yeah, that's why it's a rumor. Well, good. It's funny. It's just like there's so many different horror people that you've worked with at different things, and it's connected. And it's just amazing how so many people are connected, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's a what's the popular word that's out there right now? Misinformation.
Yes. Fake news. Fake news. Yeah, I was just going to say, well, exactly, because I was like, is that, I wonder if that's true. But, you know, speaking of lots of people in the horror genre that you've worked with, I know on Phantom of the Opera, you got to work with Robert Englund, and, you know, who's huge in the horror genre, too. What was that experience like?
Well, you know, I mean, I've spoken a lot about that over the years because I'm asked so much, obviously, about that because he's so iconic and deservingly so. So that comment right there is the beginning of my high compliments that I give to Robert. You know, my hat's off to him. He's a consummate professional and he's a consummate actor. He's, you know, it's like, and I probably have said this before, it's like, you know, one of the best things that ever happened to Robert Englund, I'm assuming he's made a fortune from it, is, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. Boy, one of the worst things that ever happened to Robert Englund is Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, it's that double-edged sword because we can go on for 2 hours, 3 hours right now about the actors who are wonderful actors who played a part that's so iconic. It's like, it's so hard to see them past that part.
Yeah.
It's happened to so many actors. And, you know, to overcome, it's a terrible choice of words, Jill.
I know you're saying.
He didn't. Yeah. He doesn't need to overcome Freddy Krueger, but how to navigate, that's a better word. How to navigate having played such an iconic role in the horror genre and do other
something different
characters that are, it's hard. It's got to be hard. I mean, I really don't know much about his career. I mean, I don't follow people's careers. What I'm saying, I'm not, you know.
Well, but another person that was in Phantom of the Opera was Molly Shannon. I was just wondering about your experience with her. Was she funny then?
Great. I love her. Of course. Oh my God. I have this really good friend who was working for me at the time. Her name was Tanes, and she came to Budapest with me. She was there with me for the first couple of weeks, helping me, getting me set up and everything. And she and Molly also really hit it off. And then Molly has a best friend that she grew up with in Ohio named Debbie. And everyone is still good friends. I've been the most on the out, you know, but they've all stayed connected, but I still stay connected to them. And, but Molly, you know, before she did Saturday Night Live, that character, the one, the Catholic schoolgirl character, yes,
Mary Catherine Gallagher,
she was doing that for us all the time. Like at the, you know, at our apartments and, she was hilarious. And she was always a comedian. That was like her thing. And she's just a lovely, lovely person.
Oh, that's good.
I just saw a picture. Oh, where are you from?
Hilliard.
Where in Ohio?
It's near Columbus.
Near?
Yeah.
Oh, near Columbus. That's where they're from.
Oh, my gosh.
Columbus. Yeah. I think that's where they're from. Yeah, and I think, if I remember correctly, Dwight, the director, I think he and Molly, I think they both were from Columbus, if I remember correctly.
Oh, my gosh. I should know that.
Ohio, yeah.
A lot of Ohioans. you know, moving through your career, then of course came Popcorn in 1999, which was such a fun, crazy kind of horror movie. It felt like it's almost like before its time with the whole like meta movie within a movie thing. Another thing I know you've spoken about with Popcorn is that I know you took over the role from another actress and came in kind of later in the shooting. How did that happen? Can you tell us about that?
Well, that was really interesting because I was shooting a film called Rich Girl in LA.
Sean King, right? Sean King?
Yeah, Sean was in it. Yeah. Yeah,
General Hospital.
Yes, General Hospital. I think he did that after. He might have been on it. I don't know. I don't keep track. he was in it. And Don Michael Paul, who was the nicest person, I don't know, maybe in the universe.
Oh, wow.
just a lovely, lovely human being. I mean, a stellar, fantastic human being. But so I was shooting Rich Girl, and I had read for Popcorn. And I don't, you know, who knows if these things, this could be misinformation. who knows if this is true, but what I was told was that the producer helped me out. I just can't believe I've forgotten his name. Oh. Did all the Porgy movies.
Oh, I don't know his name, but I know he did Porky's.
you know, the guy who did Porky movies.
so many movies. This is shameful that I'm forgetting his name.
That's okay.
No worries, no worries.
Anyway, forgive me. He wanted the other actors, and the director, who is the writer, wanted me. And they hired her. And then I was doing Rich Girl, and we ran out of money. I mean, they went over budget, and there was like 1 or 2 days, and they would need 2 weeks or 1 week just to, you know, get that funding back in place to finish Rich Girl. And in that week, I got Popcorn, and my agents another film I wanted to pass on because I'd also gotten this show that was, it was a play, and it was starting in San Francisco. Then it was going to the Goodman into Chicago, and then it bound for Broadway, which it did do. And my agents talked me out of doing that and talked me into doing Popcorn instead. And so I went over there, and I'll never forget my first day on set, the first scene where she's sleeping in the bed and asleep.
Oh, yeah.
And literally the director had to pull my toe to wake me up.
Oh, you were tired.
I agreed. I agreed to do the film. They set all the terms. It took them up a whole day to get that all done. They did it very, very fast. And by night, late afternoon, I was on a plane. I arrived at like midnight in Jamaica.
Wow.
And then I went and did wardrobe fittings until 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I had to be on set at 7.
Oh.
I had to be up at 6. I was just like, oh.
Did they just try out the other actors and just didn't work, or the director's just like, you know, overruled, I'm bringing in Jill?
no, there were a lot of changes that took place. The original writer director was left. That was the irony, is that he also left, and then they brought in me, who he originally didn't want. I was the second choice.
Oh.
And then it was a different shooting experience because they had to reshoot all of the scenes that they had shot more than half of the film.
Wow.
I mean, as a viewer, I didn't notice anything.
Yeah.
You know, I love this. And for anybody who's listening to this who doesn't know this about that film, I find this so fascinating, interesting. A, all the sound in the movie had to be replaced.
Wow.
Because our sound guys in Jamaica just weren't quite up to the level that the film needed to be. So all the movie is completely looped.
Wow.
And almost, I would say, if there's any of it left, it's got to be 5%. I know. And then the other thing is, with for half of the movie, when you see me and it's a close up of me, and then I'm talking, I don't know, maybe to Toby, you know, whatever the other character in there, it's possible that his responses are from the other actors because they just shot what they needed to shoot.
Wow.
Or me in the two shot or me in the master, but they didn't go and redo the whole thing. It was just like, we need this piece, we need this piece, we need this piece, we need this piece. And that's all they shot. So you didn't get that sense of continuity.
What a crazy way to shoot a movie. And you never would know the beauty again of editing. You know, speaking of crazy things like with so the title obviously is Popcorn. And growing up when I saw this, I always thought, okay, it's because it takes place in a movie theater, you know, popcorn and a movie theater. But then again, I read somewhere that it was actually linked to something that originally was like an element of the film in the script that was cut. Do you know anything about this? Was there something in the plot related to popcorn that ended up being cut?
Okay, so that would have been before my time because I came in when they were. That's a question for like Malcolm Danar or someone who was there in Jamaica forever because they were there. The rest of the cast was in that country forever.
Wow.
You know, but, you know, I'm very into personal things, like how I said I'm cutting glass. And when I brought up, you know, it was meant to be, I actually wasn't talking about Brad. I was talking about working with my best friend.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
That's why I brought that up. About her, but that it was meant to be that I got that experience before she was no longer with us.
Yeah.
But on a personal level, even though it is acting and all, the concept of being able to work with Dee Wallace was just, you know, to me, I was like, because of course I had first billing, but to this day, I feel shameful for that. I feel like I don't deserve it. Dee Wallace is in the movie.
And she's been in so much also. Her.
Did you bond? I mean, like, was it since you came in a little later, are you still friends with the cast? I mean, besides Dee Wallace Stone, like, did you bond with the other, like Kelly Jo Minter?
You know, how do I say it? Maybe some people would say snob, but I'm not a snob at all. But but it could be interpreted that way, you know. I just was quiet to myself, I never even thought of it that way. Who I've learned that from is my friend, who's become a friend of mine. We were friendly on the set, Malcolm. Mm-hmm. He and I become, you know, friendly over the years, and as he, you know, lives close to where I live in LA and everything. And anyway, he, in a couple of interviews, that I've been involved with him, he'll say, oh, Jo was, you know, quiet and shy and kept to herself. And, you know, she had that big suite up there. And he'll say silly things like that. But no. So I just kind of, would do my work and then go to my room, to the hotel. And I wasn't a hanger outer, but I never was that way. It was like my interest was always like, director, cinematographer. Mm. I never really was a hangout with the actors kind of person.
We've actually heard that from a number of people we've interviewed, just where, you know, it's still a job. And so a lot of people, they just keep their focus on doing the work. And I mean, it is. A lot of people think
it's a party.
Think acting, you're just hanging out all the time. But no, it really is a job. So I think there are lots of people who do that and just want to, you know, take it seriously and, you know, dedicate themselves to the role. But, you know,
that's the way Terry was. When you asked me about Terry, that's probably, you know, it was probably people like him working with people like him, where I learned it from people that were just very friendly, very nice, but they know what they're there to do.
Exactly. And yeah, totally.
That's kind of like but I did love personally working with Dee. I look at one thing, E.T.'s mom. Anyone who's E.T.'s mom.
You're like, I worked with E.T. So you've worked with E.T.'s mom, Freddy Krueger. I'm just trying to think. Like,
Mary Catherine Gallagher.
Mary Catherine Gallagher, Brad Pitt, the guy from Lost, Terry O'Quinn. I mean, it's...
Yeah, you're the most awesome people.
No, really, it's really awesome. But to go back to what we started to talk about, yeah, because we can't shy away from When a Stranger Calls Back, because I wanted to kind of say this for the end, because I, like you, agree that the opening scene for When a Stranger Calls, just being completely honest, is one of the scariest opening scenes of all time. It just really is. And I thought the opening scene of When a Stranger Calls Back was almost just as scary. Like, yeah, you are alone in that house with this creepy guy that will not leave you alone asking for directions. And then it, you know, becomes that he's a, you know, can throw his voice and all that, but it's done so well. And I also wanted to ask you about on that movie working with Carol Kane and Charles Durning, because, you know, they both reprised their roles and then you became like the new blood in that. So what was that experience like, especially being a fan of the first one as you were?
I was a fan, but by that time in my career, you know, well, I remember sorry for going, all these things are going through my mind, but I did the play Hurley Burley. Do you know that? Remember
it's like
the movie?
It's like a 3-hour play. Is that right?
Yes. And I did it in LA with Sean Penn and Danny Aiello and I forget, Mayor Winningham. It was just a star-filled cast. And I remember Sean one time he said to me, he said, you know, for every star, for every celebrity, there's a celebrity, there's somebody you look up to, like, right? And so by the time I worked with a lot of these people, except for E.T.'s mom, I'm teasing. No, even then, of course, all that was gone. There was none of that, you know, sense of like, you know, quite. There was a little bit, but not really. I loved Carol Kane. I just thought she was so terrific in the first one. And then all the other work she had been doing over the years, I just loved her. But the one, and not but, it's different. There's a, you know, working with Charles Durning for me was a highlight. I mean, it's like, I got to work with him. You know, I got to do scenes with him that were so moving at the time and so personal. They felt so personal between the two of us. And it was just such, I'm so lucky. I feel so lucky.
No, that's great.
To work with them. I felt honored. And, you know,
it's one of those movies. It's done really well. And, you know, it's hard to do a sequel to an iconic horror movie, as you know, that can really hold up to it. And I felt like, I mean, other than getting people from the original movie, but the storyline with your character, and it just really held up.
Yeah. And I mean, in addition to The Stepfather and like Popcorn, like all your films have really stood the test of time.
Yeah, and you also have gotten to play a lot of, like you were saying, there's in horror, unfortunately, there are a lot of parts that, you know, aren't as I guess glamorous or strong, and I feel like you've gotten to play a lot of really strong admirable women in these movies. Would you agree?
I totally agree. Those were the characters that I resonated with. I think, too, my representation, for the most part, they kept me away from that other kind of stuff. Like, it was never even a question whether to do it or not. I just wasn't up for those films, I don't think, unless it was something that somebody knows that I don't. But, you know.
That
but,
misinformation yeah, out there. Gonna, no.
I feel that way too. I was like, when I've just done a few of the shows, you know, the conventions, just a few, but let me tell you, I am the most unpopular person at the shows.
What?
Like, I can't believe that.
I'm telling you.
What? I can't imagine. It's funny. We were going to ask you about that, because after this, have you participated in a lot of convention, what that's been like? But what do you mean? Really? I can't imagine that.
I don't know. I just think I I don't know. I don't get it. I mean, I kind of get it, but the way I see it from an observation, it doesn't bother me one way or the other, by the way, but because I'm happy if I am out there and meeting X amount of fans, that the amount of people meeting any of them is what matters to me. I like meeting the people and I like hearing what they have to say. And if they're happy to meet me and it gives them a little extra joy for that day in their life, then I'm happy to participate in that joy for them. Having said that, on the flip side of the coin, I'll be at the shows with actresses who are saying to me, oh my God, it's so lovely to meet you and blah, blah, blah. And they were in whatever film, part 10. And they've got like people lined up, you know, and they'll be like, you know, the fourth, fifth, sixth character down. Wow. So they may be wearing, and for the conventions, what I've learned is having a small part in a gigantic film has much more value than being a leading character holding up the film.
Yeah.
That not a lot of people saw, you know. Wow. It's just more diehard fans. I mean, I have people at the shows who say to me over and over again, I drove, you know, 9 hours to meet you. Wow. I took a train. So because I think my movies, they don't get, you know, they're not, it's like nobody's going, I don't want to say nobody because there are people that love popcorn. But on the convention scene, you know, they're looking. You guys are so adorable. But, you know, I think on the convention scene, let's be honest, you know, you follow the money. They go for the more popular, more blah, 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 blah. I don't begrudge that experience for anybody at all. I'm so happy for them. So many people, do you know how many actors, this is the gift that keeps giving these conventions?
Yeah.
And the fact that they were in these iconic films, you know, my hat's off to them. You know, it makes me go, God, I wish I'd done part 8, you know.
No, it is crazy. You'd be surprised. I mean, obviously, Tim and I have been to some horror conventions, but you'd be surprised. Like, some people that will have a 5-second role in one film are there. Oh, yeah. And they come to every convention. And yeah, I mean, I guess more power to them. But I mean, I can tell you personally, if we saw you at a convention, we'd be going right up to you, because we are huge fans. We have been for a long time. And like I said, you played really enduring roles, not just in, I mean, yes, maybe it's not Friday the 13th franchise or Halloween franchise, which we also love, but so many singular standout movies that are very memorable, you know, throughout the genre. I think
they're such strong films. They're like, they, as I said before, they do stand the test of time.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. And I feel like some of them are like, both for When a Stranger Calls Back and Phantom of the Opera now.
Yeah.
Finding new audiences. You know, when they came out on Blu-ray, When a Stranger Calls Back, I didn't read the reviews, but I have been told that a lot of people were just, some people saying this is, you know, one of the few films where the sequel's better. A lot of people.
I personally think that. I mean, just because it just has a strong movie throughout. Whereas the other one, I don't know.
The original has a weird kind of middle section without Carol Kane that is a little weird. So I definitely agree. It's like it has a very strong opening, strong ending, and the middle's a little weird. Whereas When a Stranger Calls Back kind of just keeps it going throughout.
Yeah, I think that's probably why people say it's better. But, you know, I am like you, Matt, where I'm just crazy about that opening with Carol Kane. It was so realistic. Like,
oh, scary.
Back then, there weren't cell phones and there's no internet, and all there is that hardwired line into a home.
Yeah.
Oof. And you're there alone at that time. People who lived during that time, it felt so realistic. That could be me.
Yeah, I watched it as a baby, theater. I don't know if that was the best
I watched it with my mom when I was a kid, and I remember, not like a little kid, but, and we still to this day joke to like scare each other and say, have you checked the children? Literally, still to this day.
Very healthy. Very healthy.
It is good. You know, just to like a couple final wrap up of questions. So looking back on your vast career, at least in specifically in some of these horror movies, which of the many amazing roles that you've played do you look back on with the most pride? Is it Stephanie from The Stepfather or When a Stranger Calls Back? Or is there one we haven't mentioned? Which one do you look back kind of with the most pride?
In the movies, I would say it's a toss-up between When a Stranger Calls Back and The Stepfather, those two movies, playing those two characters. Both of them, for some reason, I just love the characters. I just got them. I really enjoyed one of the few, Babes in Toyland. I loved working yes. with Drew Barrymore. We became very friendly during the filming, and that was an actress. I did hang out with her and her mom at the time.
More of the E.T. family.
Yeah. You can't
yeah,
escape
that's E.T. right. Yes, it's E.T. I still love E.T. E.T.
You just need to work with, what is his name who played Elliot?
Henry Thomas.
You just have to work with Henry Thomas and you've got the whole family.
Oh, I wonder if I did work with him. I don't think I have. But, you know, because sometimes like people pop up like, and you forget that you've worked with them. Like I was watching, oh, I love that film with Kelly McGillis and Harrison Ford.
Witness?
Witness.
Yes.
I was watching Witness. I was thinking, boy, what, Lucas Haas, you know, whatever happened to him? I did a film with him. I did a TV movie with him. It was like he was in it. I totally forgot, you know. It's like, it's funny how life is funny that way.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Jill, we just have one final question for you. Yeah. We ask this to everyone.
Wait, before you do, I have just one. February 1st is Popcorn Day. It's the 30th anniversary. Are you going to do anything?
30? Yes, it is 30.
I did not know that.
Oh, well, that was my little fun fact for the day, but go ahead, Matt.
February 1st, 2021. Yes. Yeah.
Well, what should I do? How about I do something really boring and
have popcorn?
Have popcorn and call up D. Wallace.
Yeah. And say, check the children.
Say, have you? Yeah, crank call D. Wallace, who had nothing to do with What a Stranger Calls, and say, have you checked the children?
Yeah, just for fun.
Or I can call her and say, I'm phoning home.
Oh, yes. You could say, oh my God, that's funny. Well, the last question we ask every person we interviewed, what is one thing you can tell us about your experience working on any of these horror movies that you've never told any other interviewer, podcaster, publication, just one thing about any of these working on any of these horror movies that you've never told any other publication?
Oh my God. Talk about putting somebody on the spot.
Oh, it's totally meant to do. And again, it doesn't have to be scandalous. It could be the tiniest little dumb thing or anything.
No, of course. Shoot. But I've never told anybody. I just can't think. I'm such a little, I go talk. So I don't know if there is anything.
Maybe anything obscure from experience.
Like maybe in one scene you wore heels, but in the next you wear ballet slippers. I don't know.
In The Stepfather, nobody's ever brought this up. It's a tiny little thing, but in one of the shots, you see something on my feet that you don't see in the other shots when she's battling him.
Oh, what is it?
I think I must be, it was maybe cold. So they let me, when they weren't seeing my feet, put like socks or shoes on or something. And you catch it.
Oh, we're going to have to look for that.
Yeah, we're going to revisit it again.
I love little things like that. It's like, I get, yeah, like little weird things that are not cut or in continuity and things like that.
Yeah, but there, this one has come up before, but only like one other time. So I'll tell you. So it's one and a half. This is 1.5.
Okay. 1.5. Well, we're going to consider it a Happy Horror Time exclusive tidbit.
So if you're going to, in terms of like, I love those, by the way, those pictures. It's like, what doesn't belong in this picture? Or finding, you know, remember those?
Yeah,
of course.
You can do that with my feet. I think it's socks or slippers or something that's on my feet that's, and they're not in it yet. Whatever's on my feet's not supposed to be there. And then the other thing is in popcorn, there is a scene where the other actress is in it.
Wait, which scene?
You have to go watch it.
And wait, do we know who the other actress is? Do we know who the other actress is?
But it's not a close-up. It's a big wide shot.
Oh.
It's a big wide shot. It's in the theater. I'll give you a lot of hints, okay?
Okay.
It's in the theater, and it's when they're getting ready.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I love it. I love it. So we have to look for...
Was the actress that was in... Is it okay to say who it is?
Yeah.
A lot of people. It was the actress... I don't know her last name. She was the little girl that starred in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Amy...
Oh, okay. I remember her.
I remember her. Yeah, I don't know her name either, but...
She was blonde in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Yeah.
Yeah, she was blonde in this. So that's why she's noticeable. You can't miss her.
Oh, my gosh. So we...
outfit.
That is great. I totally want to look for... We'll find Amy from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids in a scene in popcorn. Wow. Well, look, this has been such a pleasure speaking with you, Jill. Seriously, you have made our day. We're so happy that we got the chance to speak with you. Thank you so much for taking the time, really.
Yes, you're awesome.
Oh, Tim. Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much. What a pleasure. Thank you for giving me this lovely time today, too.
Of course.
And we will stay in touch to let you know when this episode is going to come out. It's probably going to come out over the next few months, but we'll definitely, when it comes out, send you a link to it. And we're just so excited. We're so happy we got to speak with you. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well,
bye, guys. Have a great day.
Yes, you too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and many other platforms.
If you'd like to stay updated on the podcast, please like and follow our Happy Horror Time page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
To contact us, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your movie recommendations or any horror stars you'd like us to interview.
To support the podcast and gain access to our bonus episodes, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime and sign up to be a patron. We try to release at least one bonus episode per month and really appreciate the support.
Before we go, I just want to give a major shout out to our co-producer, Jacob Randall, without whom this podcast wouldn't be possible. Please check out his true crime podcast. It's called Crime of Your Life, where he examines obscure and unsolved criminal cases and mysteries. It's incredibly engaging for both true crime lovers or just anyone who loves a good mystery. So we highly recommend Crime of Your Life.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert.
And thanks again for listening to Happy Horror Time.